Hello, you are listening to episode one of the Launch Over podcast, coming at you from the Without Your Head Network. I am Sophia Cassiola.
And I'm Michael J. Epstein.
This is going to be super casual, just talk with us. We used to do newsletters to keep in touch with people, and now podcasts are the thing.
Yeah, we figure nobody wants to read emails anymore, but if we say a bunch of stuff in an audio format, maybe people will listen.
Maybe three people will listen, and that's cool.
Or four.
So what we figured we would do with this is just kind of talk about what we're up to. And one of the things we're usually up to is watching a lot of movies. And usually we watch pretty cool stuff because we're cool kids. You know, a lot of giallo, a lot of 70s art films. But during this pandemic, we've been really having trouble focusing on stuff like that that we actually love. And so we've been watching like a lot of candy movies. And one franchise that we just finished up, we watched all, I think there's six or seven movies. I don't even remember now, is the Mission Impossible films. And the first three are kind of garbage, I think, in my opinion. And the female characters suck. They're very disappointing movies. And then they kind of get better. I love Cold War spy movies. It's just like a genre that I love. And I think like the 4, 5, and 6 in there, they kind of just embraced a very 70s Cold War spy movie aesthetic. So I think that's pretty cool. And they got a lot better. And they have a couple female characters that are cool.
The only thing I didn't feel as strongly as you did about the negative aspects of the first three. I think they're all kind of fluff anyway. But I was kind of offended that Jim Phelps, the character from the original Mission Impossible TV show, which I loved, became spoiler, I guess, if you haven't seen this movie from 1996. But he's the villain in the first film. And I thought that was kind of a mean thing to do to Peter Graves. I've been saying that they've been dancing or pissing on Peter Graves' grave by doing that. So other than that, I thought, you know, they're all fine.
And it's like not a surprise because it's John Voight. And like there's just no way he's going to play like a reasonable character.
No, he seems like a jerk from the beginning. So
I mean, he seems like a jerk in real life. Yeah, so that's true too. Just kind of seeps into all of his roles and that's fine. One other thing I want to talk about is one of our favorite movies from last year was One Cut of the Dead. And it's a movie that I recommend everybody watches and just make sure you make it to the end because we hated it for the first hour. And then I laughed the hardest I've ever laughed in my life for the last half hour. So it has a long setup that's totally worth it in the end. They did a Zoom movie, basically, that production team called One Cut of the Dead Mission Remote. And it's like too long, but it's pretty fun. And so I also recommend that. If you've seen One Cut of the Dead, like, don't watch this if you haven't seen that because the characters are all the same.
It's cute, though.
It is cute. It's very and cute. I felt sad for them at the end because they're like, it got really sad because they were just talking about missing being on set. So it's very relatable.
Yeah, yeah. There's apparently another One Cut of the Dead TV movie that was made in Japan that has not been released in the US yet. So I'm waiting to see what that's all about. But where they go to Hollywood, interestingly enough. So anyway, that franchise is pretty cool. I was watching without Sophia. I watched every Rob Zombie movie. It was just kind of a thing that I wanted to fill in the gaps in some of my horror knowledge. I like to watch a lot of, even if things don't necessarily interest me at first, I like to kind of be aware of everything in the horror realm. And I'm a big fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that. So I thought, you know, maybe it's worth seeing the whatever it's called, the Devil's Rejects trilogy or the House of a Thousand Corpses trilogy. And I have to say, I ended up really loving it. I thought House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, and even Three from Hell were pretty cool. They're not really structured like normal narrative movies. I'm not sure Rob Zombie's really that focused on storytelling so much as he is on kind of like making wacky characters and having like cartoonish fun dialogue. But they do mess around quite a lot with your understanding of good and evil and the way that you relate to the characters. Because every character in these movies is pretty much just a sociopathic and does unforgivable things. But you end up kind of rooting for them or kind of feeling things about them that you shouldn't feel. And I think that's a cool experience. You know, I think he deserves some credit for that. And people often don't really give him the credit that he deserves, you know? He's trying, at least, to make, like, art films in the form of, like, trashy exploitation films. So, I'm into it.
Michael also forced me to watch both Bill and Ted movies for another podcast that he's on. I like them okay. I feel like they don't hold up in a lot of ways. And I know, like, Michael tried to tell me the point is that they're losers, but this whole male exceptionalism, like, failing upward aesthetic to them is just not something that it rankles me. And the fact that, like, the princesses are just like their prize girlfriends at the end of both movies, kind of, and they're just kind of blah characters, just total lampshades. It just, I didn't love them. I don't hate them. They just, I missed it, I think. I'm excited to see the new one.
I thought they were both pretty, held up pretty well still. I mean, I agree with what you're saying that but it is part of the joke is that it's like the two biggest idiots in the world save the entire universe. Like the fate of the entire universe is dependent on the two most like incompetent, foolish people. And I think I have to say like what you're saying.
White males in
yeah, yeah,
general.
Yeah. I understand, but what you're saying, I think the new movie is actually directly addressing that. We haven't seen it yet, so we don't quite know. But they at the end of Bogus Journey, they have two kids that they name. They each have a kid that they name after the other one. So one is named Bill and one is named Ted, right? But it turns out, and we didn't, I think in Bogus Journey they intended them as boys, but now they've shifted it for Face the Music so that they're daughters. And I have a feeling that the daughters are going to play a really big role in making this universe saving happen. And I think they recognize a lot of the, like, what was done in the 90s in terms of, like, how we deal with gender politics and things like that. I think Alex Winter, I think, is a very smart guy, and he's very politically active. And I'm pretty confident that the new movie is going to address a lot of the things that you're talking about.
Right. I hope they do. I mean, obviously, things have changed in the last 30 years, and I often watch things with, like, a lot of leeway for the time period. But, it still can bother me.
Yeah. You're not wrong. It's definitely there.
Yeah.
Feels like no movies from that era really address any of that well. So you have to either, it's something that if that ruins it for you, it ruins it for you. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But, both were still fun for me. While recognizing, some of that, and there's like gay jokes in it and other things that definitely feel like of the period and like uncomfortable and not really, I don't think those guys, anybody who wrote the movie, I don't think anybody who was in the movie really feels like that stuff holds up either. So it's not like we're just the ones, saying that. I think those things will be addressed in the new movie.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm excited for the new one.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we've been watching. And I think, as the second segment of this, we wanted to talk about what we've been working on, some news. So this is kind of like a newsletter, what are we doing? It's like we're calling you on the phone and having a chat about our lives, but you just don't get to say anything. So I think that's kind of fun, right?
You can blast us in comments.
Yeah, you can send us nasty emails.
Do you want to talk about what we were working on pre-pandemic that's like in leeway or
sure.
Just what's been happening recently?
Let's talk about recently and then we'll talk about the projects. Is that fine?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing some cool stuff. One thing, I mean, I guess this was from 4 years ago, but it was finally released is like right before I left Boston, I was in a band called Drap. And I played bass and I'd sing a little backup in it. So finally we released our last EP that we had done together that we recorded right before I left Boston and moved to LA. So that was cool and I'm excited it's out. And we did a music video that we all shot in isolation and our singer Tanya put it all together. And so that was really cool. So the band is called Drab and the EP is called Why Don't Women Like Me? And the music video is out there too.
And we'll include a roundup of links somehow with this. We're new to this whole podcasting thing, so we're like, how do you make it clickable or do a thing? But we'll put comments that have all the links to all these things that we're talking about.
Semi-related to that is one of my bandmates in the band Drab, Jason Lane, asked me to contribute vocals for another band that he's in called Emerald Comets. And they just put out an album that they also recorded since the pandemic happened. And it's called Strangelands. And I sing on the title track that's called Strangelands. So that just came out this week and it's pretty cool. So definitely check it out and hear me on it and some other awesome people.
Yeah, and I think we've done a little bit more music recording. So we've got a couple of other projects that are going to be coming out soon. So that's, we've returned a little bit to the music in the last couple months. And I think that'll be a fun set of things for the future. Hint, no spoilers, but
coming up, there will be more announcements.
Right. So I think, you know, for me, some of the exciting stuff that's been happening has been related to film festivals, because one of the great frustrations of the current situation is that we can't really travel. So in March, I had traveled to Grindsploitation in Tennessee and had a really fun time there. And we had plans to go to a couple of other fests, but they've all been either postponed or moved online or done in ways that aren't really conducive to travel. But one thing, one of the fests that we had a lot of fun with was Sick and Wrong, which happened last month. Now I can't even keep track of what month it is, a month and a half ago. It was a really cool experience because I wasn't sure if taking, you know, what would be an on-site festival and trying to figure out a solution to put it online would work at all. But they used a system called Eventive where you could watch all the movies and you had a week to watch 120 movies, which I watched all 120. I made it my mission to see everything that the festival offered. And they had Q&As for every block of films or every, if they're features, they had their own Q&As. And so I watched all those as well. And it was a really, really cool lineup of films. I mean, there's really awesome stuff. We had a bunch of films in it as well, so I don't want to say that those were cool. But it was a really, really fun lineup of stuff. And I think Stephen, who curates that and puts it together, deserves a lot of credit for really addressing that type of thing. I want to say, you know, I don't want to call it offensive content or edgy content or something along those lines, but taking a festival that's called Sick and Wrong and creating an inclusive environment and one that lets boundaries get pushed without it being kind of like edgelording or something along those lines. So I thought it was a great fest. Tons of great films.
Lots of fluids.
Very wet. There was a 30-minute documentary about a guy who liked to be peed on. You know, stuff like that. But it was stuff I never thought I'd see, and stuff I maybe didn't want to see. But it was all worth it. For us, one of the fun parts of that is that we had three films that were there, and we had produced two of them. One of them was called Shiny Diamonds. That's a short film that we worked on with our friends Seth and Tony, and they brought us in to produce, and Sophia was the cinematographer. And you know, that film played there. It's played a couple of other places. It's got a few more screenings coming up.
It's coming up at Genre Blast.
It's coming up at Genre Blast. Yeah. And so that was fun. We got to have our movie called Darling Pet Monkey that we are collaborating with our friend Jim McDonough on. It's a short documentary about this guy, Tim Tate, who lives in the DC area. And in the late 60s, he mail ordered a monkey from the back of a magazine. And this was a real thing. And he got the monkey. And then the documentary tells the story of that, which everything goes kind of haywire.
Yes.
And that also is playing some festivals coming up, you know, a bunch of places, including Fantasia, which is not announced yet, but will be announced by the time this is released. So it's okay. I can say that.
Sure.
And that's part of a bigger project. You may be familiar or you may not be familiar with our band that we had back in Boston a few years ago called Darling Pet Monkey, which is the same as the title of the movie, though it's spelled differently. But we wrote songs based on items sold in the back of comic books like X-Ray Specs and Sea Monkeys and Darling Pet Monkey. And we are currently working on a feature documentary that includes some of those stories and some of the history of that and all kinds of stuff. So that's a slow moving project, I would say, but it's something that's coming along. And Jim did this segment kind of as part of that, but we thought it would be fun to take it around on the festival circuit. And it's been received really well so far. People seem to really enjoy it. Then, I'm sorry, I'm talking about everything, but I guess it's my story here. Then
you didn't mention that. Oh, you're getting to that.
I was getting
to that. We won an award.
We won an award. I'm about to say. Sorry. But you can talk about it if you want.
I mean, I don't know. Sure. We made a movie called Pride. It's more Michael's brainchild, I would say. But it's definitely our most controversial movie to date, our most extreme movie, and probably not something we were going to do a ton of, but it was a lot of fun to make. And we won the Weirdest Boner Award at Sick and Wrong.
We did.
Which is pretty great.
It's the award. Honestly, last year when I saw that we had a film that we had worked on called Half Cocked playing at Sick and Wrong last year. And it was not nominated for the Weirdest Boner Award. And I did complain. I didn't complain, really. But I made a comment that I was disappointed that we weren't nominated for Weirdest Boner. So it really came around this year that was the thing that we won. Pride is a very graphic short film that we made for an anthology called Seven Sins that is currently out on Blu-ray in North America.
Just came out like this week.
Yeah, by Dark Side Releasing. I'm not sure when it's going to be out, digital or anything like that, but we haven't seen the full
if ever, because it's very extreme, so it might only ever be on Blu-ray.
It might only be on Blu-ray, yeah.
Or, I don't know, maybe Tubi or somebody will take it.
We'll get back to you on that, yeah. Though, what it looks like and everything. I ordered a copy. We should have that any day now, and we'll check it out. But yeah, so our film Pride, it's kind of an experimental film looking at vengeance for like the religious cover-up of sexual abuse, I guess is what I would say. So it's a pretty extreme, intense movie. And you know, the response to it has been pretty good. I've been pretty happy, even though it's definitely not a movie that is going to be comfortable for people to watch. There's a lot of horrible things in it. But yeah, so that won an award at Sick and Wrong. That was pretty cool. And I think that kind of sums up Sick and Wrong. I mean, definitely check them out. If you've got a movie that is sick and or wrong, I would say that is a place to submit. You know, we could talk about some of the movies there. I think there's so many good ones that I hate to like sit and single out anything. But one of my favorite ones was this movie called Pig Meats, which reminded me a lot of that the Dan Deacon, Liam Lynch thing with the drinking out of cups, like with the lizard, where it's just stream of consciousness nonsense. And I guess the Pig Meats thing was a guy imitating a fake Russian accent, telling a story about how somebody broke into his house and forced him to eat bacon, and that's why he learned he loved bacon. It's a little like Green Eggs and Ham, I guess. But it was a really funny thing, and it just showed the guy telling the story at different stages of his life to everybody. It was like the most important thing that had ever happened. And that was a really, that entertained me a lot, even if it was pretty silly. Was there anything that you remember that stood out for you? Am I putting you on the spot?
I loved Questions Peanut Butter.
Oh yeah, that was a good one.
I have like a lot of sensory, I don't know if that's the term, issues with food on people's faces. And it's just a thing. I can't, like, it makes me gag any food situations. But that one, it was so, I laughed really hard.
Yeah, it was very
really
funny.
It
was people on a date where they are kind of asking each other questions, getting to know each other. And things take a very weird, very weird turn.
It gets odd for sure.
Very uncomfortable turn. So that was a really cool movie. I did really enjoy that. There are a whole bunch of great films. I mean, I don't want to single anything out. There's so many good ones, but most of them aren't available for you to watch anyway. So it's, you know, I don't even want to. If I plug them, you won't get to see them. So
yeah, there are so many cool ones. Washed was really cool. It had a lot of cool stop motion.
Oh yeah,
New York City. Laundromat horror.
Right.
It was cool. Hellevate was like a elevator horror. Very cool, like one location, one actor short film. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. I saw a feature there called The Thousand Kings that was just like a really surreal art film. I read the synopsis after and I'm like, oh, that was what it was about, because I really didn't know. But it was sort of these monks. It's a very, it reminded me of Tron almost, in that it was, I think it was a lot of CG, but it had this like real people filmed and then their faces in this like kind of digital environment. And it was like a bunch of monks gathered around a kind of chosen one. It was all based around sound and all this. It was a really interesting movie, a German movie that I think might be coming out soon. So if you get a chance to see that, Thousand Kings is really cool.
I also laughed really hard at Santa Land. It's an animated short that was like about a little girl asking Santa for whatever, a brother or something, but it takes like some bad turns, and I laughed really hard, and then I told somebody I really liked that one, and they thought I was sick for liking that one.
I mean,
but it was just so insane. It was just zany, and I didn't find it very offensive, but I think this person did.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's animated. Like, you can't go too far in an animated movie, you know?
you obviously haven't seen some animated movies, but...
You cannot go too far. Maybe you can. I don't actually love animation, and that's just a defect with me, is, like, I just don't emotionally respond to animated films very often. So, like, the fact that that one got me to laugh pretty hard was, you know...
Cool.
A testament to its zaniness.
Yeah. And so there are some other festivals coming up, I guess, there's a couple that are online that I'm excited to attend, like Horrible Imaginings is coming up,
yeah,
and Fantasia is coming up, and those are going to be online.
And Fantasia's only for Canada, though, right?
Well, we may be able to, since we are
producers,
involved in filmmaking,
we're
there,
producers.
I think we may be able to get access. But yeah, I don't think it's open to everybody.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. We may not even get access. I don't know. But that's cool. I mean, I'm glad to see that stuff moving online. I'm hoping to spend some time watching it and watching the Q&As and doing all that. And one of our favorite festivals is not online. And unfortunately, we won't be able to attend. But Genre Blast just made all their announcements and award announcements and everything. And that's a festival that we've been to. This is now their fifth year. We had a movie in the first year, but we didn't attend. And then we both had movies or something and attended every other year, and really have just loved the community around that and have really enjoyed.
It's just really fun. It's at the Alamo Draft House in Winchester, Virginia. So I guess if you're in driving distance of that, you should go. It's Labor Day weekend. But yeah, it's like we all stay at the hotel right next door to the Draft House, and you just, it's like, I call it camp. We all just go and we hang out with our fellow filmmakers for the weekend, and it's just a lot of fun. And the selections are always really great. And the people who run it are really great and really care about the filmmakers. So it's just a really great fest for enjoyment.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll be physically back there next year.
Yeah. But we have a bunch of projects that are going this year.
We do. Yeah. You want to talk about that?
Sure. A project that I was cinematographer on called Tea Time. It's a really fun, cute short about a murderous little girl. Is nominated for Best Comedy.
Comedy Short,
yeah. So that's really fun. So I'm glad that made it. Shiny Diamonds is in it. And that was nominated for Best Score and Best Actor for Seth Chatfield. So I was cinematographer on that also, and we helped produce that one.
Right. And the score, I did the score with our oft collaborator, Catherine Capozzi, under our band name Night Kisses that we use kind of for all of our scoring work. So that was cool. We've actually been nominated many years at Genre Blast. We seem to be lucky enough to get nominations every, you know, almost every year for score for a project. So that's been really cool. Our friend Izzy Lee also has a film there called Disco Graveyard that I edited, and that's kind of like a collage madness existential poem piece, I guess. Hopefully she doesn't hate that description of it, but it's a really fun little movie, and it's nominated for Best Micro Short. I think it definitely, it's the kind of film that you need right now. It talks about the meaning of life in a weird way, with lots of bombardment of interesting visual pieces. So that's there as well.
Yeah.
So I think those are the fests that are coming up. Those are the big fest things.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about what we're...
One other bit of news.
Oh, okay.
I was interviewed 2 years ago for a book that just came out. It's called 1,000 Women in Horror, 1895 to 2018. It's by an Australian named Alexandra Heller-Nicholas. So that just came out finally. So that's cool. I mean, I'm very honored to be one of the 1,000 Women of Horror from 1895 to 2018. I think that's great. And, you know, a lot of... my favorite people are also in it. Izzy Lee, for instance, that we just mentioned,
yeah,
is in it. And just some, you know, just certainly more women than I could name right now, but a lot of my contemporaries and a lot. So
I think
it's cool.
It's really important because we, over and over again, we kind of hear like women don't like horror, women aren't involved in making horror. And I mean, and of course, you know, any list is going to be missing people who should be on it, or there's going to be things that are overlooked. But I think it serves a really valuable purpose in that it just says, like, look, we've got 1,000 people who deserve recognition, who are in this genre, who are doing important work. And so you can't continue to overlook women's roles here.
So that we don't exist.
Yeah, you just can't. I mean, it's already been silly.
Always been here.
Yeah, it's been silly since the beginning. But now it, you know, here's the evidence, right? In hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really cool project, I think. You know, even if just for the existence of it, even if you don't end up reading it, but
right. I think you know, she said that there might be room for a sequel. Since it goes up to 2018, there's so many people still left.
I'm sure there's another 1,000 easily.
Easily.
They could go back and do it. I'm sure there's 1,000 people being like, why am I not in on this? And I'm sure many of them, you know, belong in it. It's, you know, nothing is really comprehensive in that way. This is kind of, you know, a little bit, this isn't exactly related, but we work on this project called the Women of Rock Oral History Project. And it's video interviews with women in, we say rock, I guess, but it's really music.
I mean, saying rock is like the same as saying horror to me because the umbrella is so huge. You know, it's like, it's just pretty much all music, you know?
It's a very broad description. I mean, it's not necessarily a classical pianist or something, but
people are always like, why haven't you interviewed so-and-so? And it's like, well, we just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, or people ask when the project's going to be done, and it's never. Like an infinite project. Yeah,
the project is alive.
Yeah, yeah. The goal is to recognize those people and to document their stories. And I think, you know, any kind of journalistic work or literary work, you know, writing these kind of books, that to document stories that are undertold or are overlooked is really, I think, is important work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, related to that, we're working on a feature version of the Women of Rock Oral History Project. So hopefully that will be,
yes,
you know, that's a, that'll, it could
and
be,
it would definitely
years,
be a part one.
Yeah,
I
part
think.
One. Yeah.
Like the first 5 years of interviews, because we have like almost 50 interviews from the first 5 years. So
yeah.
I think it would definitely be a part one situation.
Yeah, yeah, it's not, the project will not end soon. So.
No, I think it's my, you know, former bandmate, Tanya Pearson. It's her baby in the world, and I think it's something she wants to do forever. So
yeah, so that's a cool thing we've been working on as well.
Yeah, that's definitely been one of our pandemic goals, is to finally get the first rough cut of that finished.
Yep, absolutely.
So I think that's our news.
That's
so that's
pretty
part
much it.
Two was just our news, and I guess that was a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we can say, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about what we had been working on that's been a little bit postponed at this point.
Right.
So we have another project that's in the works that you probably, if you're following anything that we're talking about, you've probably seen little
snippets.
Snippets
we haven't talked
of information.
A ton about it.
Yeah, we're not quite ready to reveal everything, but talk about it.
Right. So we are working on a mockumentary about two men who played the same horror slasher character in a 1970 horror movie. So we shot back in February, right when COVID was just like a glimmer in everybody's brain. Like we knew it existed, but it wasn't quite here yet in our minds. We shot in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Mad Monster Party convention, which is like a thing that, you know, Mad Monster still exists, but conventions don't anymore.
Well, temporarily. I hope temporarily.
But it's just like, it's just so amazing to me that we snuck this in before like all of this doesn't exist. So we flew like two 80-year-olds from New York City and from Los Angeles to Charlotte, which is already now pure insanity, you know, given our new life, to this 3-day, 4-day convention, and we shot a mockumentary with them. So it's Michael St. Michael, who's famous from The Greasy Strangler, especially. So
yeah, Michael St. Michael's is a
movie
really,
you should watch.
If you've seen The Greasy Strangler, you know that he's a fun.
He's a
fun
true
character.
Artist.
He's a true, he's true artist.
He's true eccentric.
Yeah.
And Bill Whedon, who's equally as delightful. He's been in a bunch of trauma movies, including Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Yeah,
He's
a fantastic guy. I got to work with him originally a few years ago on something called The Ungovernable Force. That was a Boston movie that I was a camera op on, and I met Bill on that, and I thought he was awesome. And we kind of stayed in touch and talked about doing some things. So when this project came along, we are working on this. We're producing it in collaboration with our friend Neil Jones from Without Your Head. And immediately, the first thing, I actually pulled it up at some point, but the first message I sent to Neil about this when we started talking about it was, wouldn't it be awesome to get Bill Whedon and Michael St. Michaels to be the two leads in this? And so we reached out to them and they both said yes.
They are both super hilarious in the movie too. And So basically, you know, we shot that. That was like a whirlwind weekend shooting that. And that I would say is about 60% of the movie maybe.
Yep.
So now we're just on pause. We had hoped to finish up a lot of it this summer and at another convention. But all that's on pause right now. If you hear... There's so much licking happening, and licking it's the dog.
Mouth sounds.
So he was being good, and now he has stood up, and he is just moving his tongue a lot.
He's telling you about the projects that he's been working on, which are mostly forcing us to take him on long walks, licking the floor until we feed him more, you know, doing his, like, making his sad eyes until he gets extra food. Various other things like that. But King Ghidorah the dog is our third.
He's on Instagram, King Ghidorah the dog.
He is. Yeah. So that's those are
kind anyway, of... yeah. So that movie's called The Once and Future Smash. And so that's just on pause basically for the foreseeable. Which is a bummer because I think it's really funny and you know.
I look forward to when it
comes out. I'm glad that we were able to shoot what we did shoot pre-coronavirus, because I'm not sure we ever would have been able to do that again.
Yeah, well, conventions are going to be really locked down in ways for quite a long time. And I think, you know, it's going to be not great to... I wouldn't necessarily want to bring older people traveling at the moment until things settle a little bit. In the meantime, it's actually... What we've shot is being edited by our friend Aaron Barocas, who we collaborated with on a short called Half Cocked that played festivals last year. And is currently available for streaming as part of a package of films put on by Genre Blast and the Alamo Winchester. So you can take a look at that movie presently and then...
Rent it
and see what that's all about. We were about to shoot a follow-up with Aaron when things got shut down. So we look forward to getting back to being able to do that someday as well.
The script for that movie is one of the Genre Blast finalists.
I think it was a semi-finalist.
Called Sitting Duck. Yeah. So someday we will shoot that movie with Aaron. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, and he has another script that is a finalist. And so he was because he has two scripts in the semi-finals or finals, he was the winner of A Nuclear Pen, which is something that we had won previously, which is...
Was that just last year?
Prolific. I think it was 2 years ago we won, maybe. But it was for being a... prolific enough screenwriter to have a couple of two or more scripts in the semifinals or finals. So pretty cool. The last thing I wanted to mention that I've been working on is I co-wrote a book with my sister. This is unrelated to any film thing. You may or may not know, but I've had a life of involvement in science and an interest in statistics and all that sort of stuff. So I wrote a book with my sister, who is a math professor, called Bigfoot Does Not Exist, An Introduction to the Fundamental Principles of Statistics, Science, and Logic. And we were inspired to write this book because of the way that people do not really understand how to process scientific information. And so it's intended for it has almost no math in it. It's really intended for a general audience to be able to understand what scientific method is, how results are reported, what they mean, what does it actually mean to say that there's a significant difference or a significant effect of something, and how logic is structured. So, you know, check that out. Bigfoot Does Not Exist. I think that's everything that we wanted to talk about
for news.
And I think that might be everything we wanted to talk about in our very first episode of this podcast. Is that true?
I think so. So yeah, basically what we were thinking, like the format is going to be like, what have we been watching? Because that's important to us. Or like what content we've been taking in. And then kind of our general news. And then what are we working on, which we talked about a bit. And, you know, maybe we'll have an occasional guest. I would like to bring some of our collaborators on.
Yeah, I think we want to take an opportunity to talk to our collaborators about working with them and working with us and see how they're doing in this strange time. A way to stay in touch with our friends, you know, see how things are going. And so hopefully you enjoyed listening. And we appreciate your time and look forward to the next episode.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.